I think the thing that we will see is some buildings will never be a good target for conversion that is purely residential. What I like to think about is how can you use buildings in a way that are not just housing, but maybe it's mixed use or multi-use.
You're listening to the Building Better Futures podcast, where innovation meets inspiration. In each episode, host Eric Hirani journeys alongside notable thought leaders who are shaping the future, cultivating exceptional work cultures, and nurturing the next generation of trailblazers. We aim to spark inspiration by engaging in dialogue with leaders from groundbreaking companies, innovative projects, and exceptional teams. Our goal is to empower individuals to positively impact those around them and leave a lasting legacy of positive change in our communities and society at large. Let's dive in together and explore what it takes to build better futures, one conversation at a time.
Today, I'm joined by Joe Larrow, Co-Managing Director and Principal at Gensler. Joe, thanks for taking the time to talk to me today. Before we get to the core conversation, I always start with good news and gratitude. So I'll ask you, are there any professional or personal good news or gratitudes you want to share with me in the audience?
Sure. So interestingly, yesterday was my daughter's birthday, and I had a dinner with her, and we got to talking about her life. And I was able to think how fortunate I am and how much gratitude I have that I have two wonderful children that are successfully going through college right now. She just got into a master's program. So I was really excited. I just felt when you start your family and you have your young children and you see them blossom into young adults, it really was a moment of gratitude. And as these years go by, I get to look back and thinking about what my wife and I have accomplished in growing our family. So I felt a good bit of gratitude yesterday for sure.
That is awesome. And like kind of aligned, maybe not. But my daughter's birthday is coming up, and in the company internally, we do good news and gratitude as part of like how we start our meetings.
Great practice.
And that was like kind of my gratitude was, yeah, I'm just excited for the day. And she's only going to be two. I've got a long way to go until she's in college.
I will say, just keeping it on that topic, so my daughter turned 23, thought about the day that she was born, which is 23 years ago, and it feels like it was yesterday.
Wow.
And it just, everyone told me when my children were young that embrace it all, be fully engaged because it's going to go so fast. And of course, when you're in the throes of it and you have two young children and you're like, it doesn't need to ever want to end because it's so hard. But it really does go so fast. It's a blink of an eye. It's just so quick. But just like anything else, you're a two-year-old, you get what you put into it, yeah. Right? And my wife and I were very much involved in everything that our children were doing. So as to see them as young professionals and young adults, it's exciting.
That's really cool. And it sounds like they're in college. And so obviously we wish them the best. But thank you for sharing. That's really personal. I appreciate that. My good news on show days is always to the guests. So I know you're super busy and we're going to get to some of the things that probably keep you really busy, but I just appreciate you making time. Yeah. One to talk to me, but also hopefully our goal here is to positively impact the next generation. So maybe you're going to inspire some future architects to be great as you are today. You know, I always like to start by letting you tell us about yourself, whatever that means to you, your background, your education, where'd you grow up? Tell us about Gensler, your role at Gensler. So share with us for a little bit.
Again, first of all, thanks for having me. And I think this is just a wonderful program. And the best way to impact our next generation of professionals is by telling the stories of how we get there. And so I'll do a little bit about myself. So I come from an immigrant family. I am an immigrant. I was born in Italy. But I was raised in Brooklyn, so in a lot of ways, I'm very much a native New Yorker, and it's the only place I've ever wanted to practice. I'm with a global firm, but yet I've always felt so rooted in my New York roots and the love for the city, and the fact that it's a melting pot of immigrants has always been something that was core to my heart. So I grew up in Brooklyn. I'm a product of the New York public school system, and I went to college at New York Institute of Technology. That's where I received my degree in architecture. And I had two jobs before I went to Gensler. When I was in school, my family was in construction. So I was always hands-on working in construction. That was kind of how my passion. I've always had a love for art and a love for design. But my family being around construction, seeing things coming from an idea to be actually realized was something that was always drove me towards architecture. When I was in high school, I had a mechanical drawing class that it was hand drafting. And there was something about it that connected the sort of my love for math and science to art that architecture really felt like it connected. And I always felt that whether I was going to eventually practice as an architect or eventually be a contractor or a constructor, that it was the right degree for where my passions lie. It turned out, you know, I went on the rest of my career to go ahead and be an architect. So while I was in school, I continued to work construction rather than do an architectural internship. I thought it would actually help me professionally because it had that sort of like, I always remember people thinking about design from a very theoretical perspective, but having that practical perspective tied to what I believe were beautiful creations, I thought would actually benefit me, and it has, right? That was, it ended up being the track. I went to smaller firms initially. The firm that my first firm was actually part of a development group, and I got a lot of really great practice there. And then I went to a firm called Harmon Jablin Architects, which was a small firm, about 20 or so people in New York. And they did an array of different types of base building work and fit out work and so on and so forth. But it was a really good, it was truly a problem solving firm. And for a young professional, I had a great mentor with me that sort of like allowed me to learn and gave me space. But it was time for me to move on at that size and scale. And I thought I would want, I interviewed with a number of large firms because I wanted to learn how a large firm operates. And I really felt that I would just go ahead and start my own firm. That was my intent. And that brings me to Gensler. And when I was at Gensler, the first thing that I noticed was that the firm culture was very entrepreneurial. And so it was really clear to me that there was a place and space for someone to think like an entrepreneur while being part of this firm's platform. So the idea of me leaving at some point, having learned how to operate a large firm and starting my own firm, really started to just escape me because I felt I could actually be a practitioner and thinking of like a practitioner or an owner in our firm. So I found a place at Gensler where all the things that drove me, which is really being business oriented, being a creative problem solver and really driving beautiful architecture, I could do at this firm in the same way that I would if I was a sole practitioner. So the idea of leaving to start a firm just sort of like left me because I was doing all those things here. And the firm itself really was at an interesting point of at that point when I joined. I'm at the firm for 25 years. And when I started at the firm, we were probably about 90% workplace interiors. And for me, that wasn't an interest necessarily. I wanted to do more base building work as I grew. And that was an inflection point within the firm where we really started to zero in on diversifying our practice. So I came at a really interesting moment. The firm was really thinking about how to spread its wings and grow beyond that next to that next generation of leadership and being a diverse practice. And I was right there at the sort of footsteps of that happening. So that's where that entrepreneurial spirit came in, where I was able to go and meet with developers, meet with clients and build a practice that I had at the time, 5 years, 6 years experience. So I was really scratching that itch at the same time at the firm, which really started to define where my career started to be at Gensler, which was that of always being a builder of the practice. So while I was practicing in, you know, at the time it was financial services and those kinds of things, I was always, I had my ear on the ground with what was happening in New York and globally. And then I was able to build those practices. I did a lot of base building work, a lot of developer work, a lot of critical facilities, and a lot of the things that allowed for us to build our practice in a much more diverse way. Now, when I look at where our office is today, having been a part of many of the emerging practices and helping build them, it really, I take a lot of pride and going back to your first question of pride or things that you're proud of or excite you, I take a lot of pride in looking at our firm. The New York office is a microcosm of the macro Gensler. We are organized in practice areas, and our New York office has almost every one of the practice areas represented. And that really is something amazing considering where we were 25 years ago. So when I think of my journey, I came at the right time, at the right place at the right time for who I was at that moment professionally. I was starting my family and all those kinds of things were happening. And I was very keen on what I wanted to do for the rest of my career. I wasn't a person that was interested in job hopping and things of that nature. So at that moment, that inflection point at the firm was perfect for me and the way I thought and the way I was a practice builder. So that was something. And then finally, as it related to that part of my journey about me, I was able to really get a lot of mentorship at the firm about leadership, not about practice, right? I got that as well, of course, but really about what it means to be a leader. And that really has helped me quite a bit professionally. That's kind of, and now today, we're working on healthcare projects. We're working with the public sector. We're doing the JFK NTO, which is one of the largest aviation projects in the country. Our firm is doing, and our office is doing a lot of conversion projects where you're seeing office buildings being converted to residence, something that we think is something that is really helpful for our city. And being a thought leader in those spaces is something that's been important to me. So I get to look back, obviously I have a lot of years ahead of me, but I get to look back at my professional journey as it relates to, I feel fortunate that the steps that I've taken or the stops that I've made have been aligned with where my passions were. And to see, again, similar to what I was talking to my daughter before and looking at where she is today, when I look back at my career, to think about the impact that I've had in terms of how we allowed the office to grow or help the office grow, I take a lot of pride in that impact.
So much to unpack there. Great answer. And I really love learning more about our guests. And that's why I like to ask that question, because as much as I typically will know the guest outside of the episode, I always learn something new. So a couple of things I want to hit on. One is, have a lot of good friends from NYIT, great architecture program. So just shout out to the NYIT grads out there. And congrats to you for graduating from there also, obviously. It sounds like your family was in the industry, I'll just call it, because I consider all of it AEC.
Construction, not in the design industry. Yep.
Correct. Yeah. But I, when I think of AEC, I think of design and construction. We go hand in hand. Oh. And it brought me back to, my dad's an engineer. He's a PE. But he told us growing up, you've got to get some experience in the field. Work with the contractors that are actually building your design, because it's the best way to understand how you're going to impact someone's actual constructability, right? If you're just sitting in an office designing all day and you've never seen it put in place, it's really hard to understand what you're asking of someone else to do. So I think that's great advice. So I wanted to share that to, you know, any younger or early career professionals or even mid-career professionals. If you haven't had an experience to do that and you get an opportunity, it might be something you want to consider. And then I want to shift to a couple of things you said. Culturally, I love that it sounds like Gensler gives you an opportunity to be entrepreneurial within a large company. And it's something, we're obviously a small company, but I work with my leadership all the time on giving them the tools and the skills to be better leaders, because technically they will learn as we grow, but leadership is really a learned skill and delegation is a learned skill. And so we have this like monthly program that all of our, like my direct reports will sit in, and me too. I mean, I'm constantly learning, right? I'm a lifelong learner. And it's just exciting to hear that even at a big firm, that's something that still exists and is possible. And it's very cool. So it actually leads me into my next question. You know, co-managing director, principal, you're obviously a leader at the firm. You've talked about how mentorship has shaped your career. But how has your leadership role impacted Gensler's like mentorship for the next generation of architects? Like, is there anything you're doing actively in that space?
Yeah. So I'll talk a little bit about some of the decisions that I made that led to how I approach mentorship. But I'll first talk a little bit about, so the firm, just talking a little bit about the way the firm is set up. You know, we have 600 professionals in the New York office, and we break out into studios, which allows us to function as basically small businesses in this large platform. So that's where that entrepreneurial spirit sort of really gets to grow. And that's where we really inspire people to constantly have a space for them to really find their leadership, which was really helpful as a young professional at the firm. That actually led to how I made decisions as a leader, I made two really sort of critical decisions in the way I look at it. One is, I felt that because of my construction background and that sort of technical space, that I had a lot to offer that to my colleagues. So I really embraced what we have a learning program here, And it was constantly about sharing and teaching people how to be better professionals, right? So it's now expanded to, I mean, we have so many different learning programs. But at the time in the New York office, there was a few around the technical leadership that were creating these courses. And that inspired me. And I saw how people reacted to people taking time to teach and young professionals reacting to that mentorship and really focusing in. I did it really formally in the New York office, and then which later led to programs that went firm-wide. But I also, on my teams, I made sure that I was zeroing in to make sure that people understood what we were trying to accomplish and that they always had those goals in mind. And that really, I felt that, you know, if you think about being an engineer or an architect, we have our project work, we have our project brief, we satisfy those problems, and that is our work. But that doesn't ever complete us as professionals. So these other things where I was making a conscious effort to be a teacher was really important. That led to, as I was growing and becoming a leader within the firm, my decisions as what am I going to do with my space when I can volunteer my time or help the community as a whole. And that's so outside of the New York office, I decided to join ACE Mentorship as a mentor originally. Now I'm on the board in both for the Greater New York office, and I'm also on the national board and the executive committee for both national and New York. And it really, as a program, it aligns with who I am in so many different ways because it's focusing in on introducing the AEC profession to inner city kids who may not ever see what it means to be an architect, an engineer, or a constructor, or doesn't have representation. So that really started to lead into other things. And you and I are on the board together with Salvadori. And I also work with Make-A-Wish, which focuses on the New York State. It's called the Real Estate Council, but it focuses on wishes that relate to the design profession or construction profession. But each and everything that I did that is outside of my work, and that was where I was going to spend time and give time, always revolved around helping younger kids realize this profession or AEC community as an opportunity for their future. And it takes something that I felt strongly about, and I really continued, and I'm not a name on a board, and I don't say this, I really get engaged with what the board is trying to accomplish and focus on how we can best be in service of those students. And it's something that really has been meaningful. So I've been involved now for years and years, and I look back and think about the impact that we've had, and I see kids that are now working for us, that were in at ACE, that are currently young design professionals. And that really is something that comes full circle for me personally, where we've given our time, we've given our support, and to see people join the profession has been something that has been incredibly meaningful. We also at Gensler, I was part of the leadership for what we call Design Synergy, which is our design and delivery platform globally. And while we were doing that, we started a student design charrette, which was connected to HBCUs. And essentially, it's a program where we step in with third-year students for historically Black colleges and universities, and we do guest critiques for them. It's to support the program, but more importantly, our hope is to connect with those students to allow for them to help get internships and prepare them for interviewing and then getting their first job. So it's really about like digging in, and I think we're coming on to our sixth year. We started the program, or I guess our fifth year. Started the program about 5 years ago, and I've been mentoring on that actively for those 5 years since we started the program. And I look back and I see some of those folks working here. And again, it's really meaningful. People that I met from, I didn't even know where Hampton University was when we started, and now they're working with us today. So I really dug into that. It's something that has been meaningful to me professionally, but really the results and the fact that our firm and the people that are working on these programs with us, it's really meaningful to see how it's coming full circle and how we've helped people realize the AEC community as a professional outlet for them.
This episode is brought to you by Infinite Consulting Corp, your go-to firm for MBE certified project and construction management consulting. Discover how Infinite can help you build a better future at InfiniteConsultingCorp.com.
I love the internal program you initially started talking about. And it sounds like you've given people an opportunity to become leaders and to learn what it means to be a leader, right? Very often, I think the Peter principle, people just keep getting promoted until they're not good at what they do. And that's unfair to that person because they were probably amazing at what they did right before that they hit that ceiling. And very often they're hitting that ceiling because they're not getting the right tools or mentorship to understand from being a doer to being a leader, right? That's a big jump for a lot of people.
That's right.
I think it's great that you guys are allowing, you know, individuals to break through that ceiling. To your notes about everything you do externally, yes, Salvador is great. ACE is great. Yeah, I know you're a supporter. We're also a supporter. If anybody listening wants to support or donate, both are great organizations. Please go ahead and do that. But I love what you say about it going full circle. And we do a lot of scholarship in my office. We must have like probably 4 or 5 annual scholarships that we've been doing for multiple years. But one of the earlier ones I started was at my high school. And that's going back a decade now. And to your point, it's crazy to think like when I first handed the first check out, that was a senior in high school. And today that person, I think they're like a junior engineer at Tesla now. Like it's just amazing to see their journey. And so I love that feeling. I love to give back. And I really appreciate you speaking so fondly about that.
And we can't underestimate the importance of that. I think about the public school system in New York City. And I saw a report recently that was one out of every 10 students are homeless. We can't underestimate how much us taking time, us as in your, I know you do so much, taking time to give people that guidance, right? You can't do it all, right? But if, to give people that guidance, we can't underestimate the value of that. And as we start looking at different ways that we can be more diverse as a profession, right? Architecture, maybe even, I'm not sure how the numbers are as it relates to engineering, but we are not a diverse profession right now. And you need to do that. You have to really roll up your sleeves to get that. It's certainly not going to be something that just occurs. And the way to do it really is to get to kids that are underrepresented right now and to show them this is a platform and this is an opportunity for them.
I'm going to say this kind of tongue in cheek, but like two most famous architects on TV are Art Vandalay from Seinfeld and probably Ted Mosby from How I Met Your Mother. So more exposure, I think, is important because we're not getting that in our daily lives to engineers and architects. Doctors, yes. Attorneys, yes. Right. All over TV. But rarely do you see a design professional on TV.
And when it does, it's usually misrepresented. Right.
Yeah.
It's not what the profession is. So it's showing someone writing. What I love about ACE is the kids are they're doing something practical, right? They're designing and they're learning about structures and they're learning about engineering at all different levels. And that I think is really just so vital because what it does is it sparks that interest potentially. And that's they see that as, oh, I could see myself doing this for the rest of my life. So that's really important.
Yeah, growing up, my dad would always like, he was like engineering, architecture, the construction professions. Essentially about like civilization, right? You turn the faucet on and you expect water to come out, or you jump on the subway and you expect to get to your destination. But that only happens because a lot of really committed, dedicated people spent a lot of time, energy, and money to make that happen. And sometimes it's just overlooked. So I want to touch on another topic that I think is really interesting and it feels like a generational change. And you mentioned it earlier. So you were talking about office to residential conversions. And it sounds like you have some experience in this space. And I just like, what are some key lessons you've learned about that? I know it's been a challenge when I talk to like developers about it. You know, I think the underwriting is very difficult for them, right? Because it's a huge expense to convert these buildings. But I think we all agree it's going to be necessary. To what degree, maybe we don't know yet, but there's definitely going to be a good portion of it. So yeah, tell us about some key lessons or what you've learned about it.
So there's a number of things. I think, well, first of all, we're really excited because there's been some recent policy changes that are going to springboard more and more of this. And then with the recent approval of the City of Yes, there's going to be so much more conversation around how do we really help this housing crisis that we're not just seeing in New York. It's really a global crisis and population is going to grow. More people are going to be growing to cities. We have to have different solutions. As it relates to office to resi, when I think there's been a lot of conversation around how it doesn't pencil out and things of that nature. And I think there's probably some truth to the idea that you have to take a different point of view on where these are going to pencil out in a much better way. With new policy changes, certainly there are going to be more and more opportunities. We just completed a project at 160 Water Street called Pearl House. It was a 1960s vintage modernist building that was in the financial district right on Water Street. And it was never going to rent any longer as an office space in any very real way. And we were able to convert it to over almost 600 units, 588 units, you know, during the pandemic, where it was difficult enough to get finances. We're able to come up with a solution to allow for us to do that. And now that it's complete, probably close to 90% fully leased out, it's been really successful to see it happen. The lesson that we've learned out of that conversion, which we've been able to apply, we have so many more active projects right now, is that you really have to have a smart, strategic approach to how you're going to make the buildings viable. We have a tool that assesses whether a building is a viable option. It looks at site context, shape of building, and we give it a scoring rating. We can do it. We've done a series in New York. We've done it globally in different cities. And what's interesting is once you've gone through that step, the most important thing you learn is if there's bones there, like if you can be strategic about how to get the most apartments there and make it viable, there are strategies to make it work from a cost perspective. The thing that I find the most interesting is that contractors and developers who are thinking about being in this space come up with really interesting strategies on how to build in a way that allows for us to meet the cost constraints. And they do it in a way that's incredibly smart. So for instance, at 160, we have these blind shafts that allow for these buildings, the spaces has one of the constraints that you see in most office buildings are that they're quite deep. In that case, we created these blind shafts that'll shorten the depth of the apartments, and it allowed for them to be really smart about how to utilize that space. Those shafts, rather than being lost FAR, were reconsidered at the top of the building, and they were an overbuild. So that smart strategy allowed for them to create wonderful apartments at the top of the building. It allowed for them to utilize spaces that were never going to be good for apartments into amenities and put them in a position that the building would be incredibly successful. So utilizing those types of strategies when considering other spaces or other buildings, that's really what I think will be the differentiator, being as smart about how you can reuse a building and make it such that it sort of offsets any of the cost concerns, I think are really something that's going to be interesting. I think the thing that we will see is some buildings will never be a good target for conversion that is purely residential. What I like to think about is how can you use buildings in a way that are not just housing, but maybe it's mixed use or multi-use, in that there's portions of a building that are just ripe for use as residential. For instance, if you think of a tower in New York, because of zoning laws, you have usually podiums with smaller towers that set on top of the podium. The tower usually lends itself to an office conversion, but the podium might need a different use. So maybe it's a school, maybe it's a medical facility, maybe it's something else in its entirety, but that actually starts to weigh. And that starts to create a building that has a different point of view and a different vision, but is probably more financially viable rather than converting it in such a way that you have to do a lot of structural interventions and things of that nature, where it really starts to get costly. So being smart about taking advantage of the attributes that work is really the key components of those conversions. I do think, as a final thought on that, is I do think, though, that there's a realistic point of view that we have to have on how do we add housing. And conversions is a part of a formula, but the city as a whole, and not only our city, the cities around our country, have to start thinking about what can we do to be more additive, because the solution to our housing crises will not just be conversions. We will need to add and think about different ways of adding housing to our portfolio. The city of yes is something that I think is in the right direction, which is looking at different ways to take advantage of space.
Yeah, I mean, we clearly have a housing crisis. I love what you said about being strategic there. I wonder how many developers are thinking about alternative uses for their podiums. Schools are a great use. You know, I mean, I know the SCA needs more desks. Like, that's a real challenge for them across the city. And then the city of yes is exciting, right? I think we were all happy to see that moving forward and really excited for that. So I appreciate you sharing your thoughts on that. Most of what I've been involved in is not to the level or degree you have been. What I keep hearing is about the penciling out, but it sounds like you guys are looking at some really innovative ways to ensure things do pencil out. You know, hopefully people are reaching out to you to talk about that because you clearly have a good track record here and sounds like you've had some completed projects that have been successful.
Yeah, we have huge projects that have been successful, both in Philadelphia and in New York. And we have a lot on the boards right now. I mean, one of the projects is Pfizer's former headquarters on 42nd Street. It's going to be 1,500 units, portions of it. So it's interesting because you're taking a building that didn't have great attributes that lend itself to being a housing conversion. And we've looked at what are the best things to do there. And we're adding on top of it, taking advantage of the zoning of the Midtown East zoning. So it's a combination of some conversion and some addition that really turns out to be an amazing sort of impact to our city where we're adding 1,500 units to the portfolio. So it's really wonderful.
We've talked a lot, you know, about mentorship and functional projects and things of that nature. So I always like to give the guests the chance to highlight some projects they've worked on that they're particularly proud of. Are there any projects you want to kind of highlight or just talk about that kind of in your career you feel have really like allowed you to leave your mark on that community, right? Because that's the other thing. When we build something or we work on something, we're really impacting that community, right? In a positive way. And so I'm sure there's something you're proud of.
Well, there's a lot of projects. I mean, the thing that our firm is so client-focused, I always think of my projects as partnerships with my clients, right? I'm sure as you do as well, Eric. The thing that's kind of really interesting to me, so I have two projects that I wanted to mention. One that's in design right now, which is the New Terminal 1. As an immigrant, anyone that's coming from Europe or that area, you're probably flying in. If you're coming into New York, you're probably flying into Terminal 1. It's our international airport. And being a part of New Terminal 1 and its development, it's flying, right? It's topped out, it's enclosed. But being a part of a way that a person that's visiting America for the first time as one of our international airports, that'll be a world-class airport, not because we designed it, but just because that's a remit from the Port Authority that it needs to be one of the top five airports. Even seeing it's the way when you come into JFK now, how it's such a high-profile building and how impactful it'll be to our community, what it's done in Queens, what it's done in terms of it's got minority ownership. The partnerships have just been amazing on the project. And just having authorship on a project that is just that impact for our firm has been really meaningful to me. And when we were pursuing the project that I talked about, we were giving personal stories. And when I was pursuing the project, I talked about how important that is from my perspective. When you used to come into New Terminal 1, you were coming in if you were going through customs, you were going through a 7-foot basement ceiling, right? So it's like you were like the most unwelcoming space on the planet to see America for the first time, for us to have completely changed that experience for someone coming here for the first time and seeing our country is really meaningful. So in our city, which is a city of immigrants, it's really meaningful to see how that is, that we're going to have an impact on that experience for someone. So that's really been a project that I have a lot of pride in. I'm thinking of so many different other projects that I've worked on. But I do want to mention a small project, right? So I get to work on these really large projects throughout my career here, and it's wonderful, and New Terminal 1 being one of them as well. But I worked on a small project in South Brooklyn, a neighborhood that I grew up in, for a community center called FIAO, which is the Federation of Italian American Organizations. And it was a community center. The organization is a non-for-profit. It was really meaningful to me in that partnership with our clients. They didn't have enough money. We constantly helped them with raising the money. They never built a project before. They were in a storefront on 18th Avenue in Brooklyn. They didn't know what it meant to hire an architect, a contractor, an engineer. And we really just partnered them. We just locked arms and we helped them with this vision of where their future was. And it was initially, it was always meant to be a multicultural facility, which it turned out to be. It's in service of so many people within the community. It's one of the few indoor, and there were so many people in Brooklyn that didn't even know how to swim. There's no access to pools. So it's one of the few, they have swimming lessons. So being able to help realize something that is just an anchor to a community, again, small jewel of a project, but just being a part of making it happen And even to this day, as they continue to work on it or they continue to make revisions and help with the fundraising and things of that nature, we're still so tied to it. So from a personal perspective, to having our firm commit our time and effort to see something that is in service of a community to be realized is something that I take a lot of pride in. And one of the projects I'll always reflect on professionally as something that I will always be proud of.
Yeah, I really appreciate you sharing that. And most often, everyone shares a mega project, and the NTO is. And it's a wonderful project. And like you said, it changes even for citizens. Like even when you're flying back to the country today from other parts of the country or internationally, flying into Newark, flying to JFK, flying into LaGuardia, it's different than when, you know, maybe I was growing up or even 10 years ago. And I really applaud the Port Authority and all of their partners, you guys included, for everything they've done. But rarely does someone share a small project. And that was very nice to hear. I mean, it felt like that's authentic as you can get. And it was probably even culturally, right? I mean, you said it was the Italian Federation. I'm sure that meant a lot to you. And it's not about always the dollars and cents. Sometimes it's about who do you help and how do you help them? And that's really cool. It sounds like you guys did a lot for them on that project.
Oh, absolutely. It was a wonderful experience. And to see people utilize, when someone has a vision of something like that, You kind of think you understand what that success would look like. But if you go there now, it's buzzing with multiple cultures and they all are so linked. It's their part of their lives now. It's stitched into their lives now. And to see that happening and knowing that it was such a struggle to realize it, but to see it happening now and see how many kids are affected by it and senior citizens spend time there. So just to see how it impacted a community and really changed the profile of that community is very meaningful.
That's the power of architecture and engineering, right? You could really change people's lives, change a community. So I appreciate all that. Before we close out here, I always like to do a lightning round. First thing that comes to your head kind of answers, but if you could travel anywhere in the world, where would it be?
I've been wanting to go to Africa.
Cool.
The entire continent that I'd like to figure out a way to see as much as I possibly can. But I feel there's something special happening there right now that I want to be able to witness.
And you probably know this, but I don't know. But the way a normal map is structured, it makes Africa look kind of small compared to like other continents of the world. But Africa is actually humongous. Like I think it's bigger than like the landscape of Russia, essentially. But it looks like a third of it on a map, which is insane.
Right.
Africa is definitely on my list. I want to do safari at the very least, but I've never been to Egypt and I would love to do that. Morocco.
I did a building in Egypt, but I didn't ever do a site visit in Egypt. I actually have a building that we designed in Egypt in something called Smart Village, probably 15 years ago. I also did a building in Dubai that I never got to visit either.
Is it too late?
Not too late. It's a bit too late. Anyway.
What was your favorite cartoon as a kid?
I was a Batman guy.
Okay, cool. I like Batman. The movies have always been good. The cartoons.
Yeah, I still enjoy them even to this day.
Solid answer. So this one, I don't know if you are a sports guy, because the question is, what is the worst sports moment you've lived through?
The fifth inning of this year's World Series. It was literally like watching Little League baseball. It was unbelievable. I couldn't even believe what I was watching.
That was just sad. I'm a Yankee fan too. So it was just, that was awful. My worst sports.
It is by far the worst, but I've ever seen. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Would be the 3-0 comeback with the Sox. I mean, That was pretty bad.
But yeah, that was bad. I have to, something when they lost the first game.
The first game hurt, yeah.
Yeah, and then I had a sense that something bad was brewing.
Yeah, that was just bad.
But that was tough, no doubt about it. But this fifth inning is so, it's a fresh wound, maybe that's why.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, it was bad. I mean, I haven't seen baseball that bad, I don't know, ever, right? Like, Little League players play better than that. All right, last question. And this is the one I'm going to do an audible here. Okay. But you're an Italian in Brooklyn. So I've got to ask you, what is the best pizza slice in New York City?
L&B Spumoni.
Yep, without a doubt. Very cool. I asked, do you know Carlo Cicero from the Building Congress?
Yeah. He actually was part of the partnership on Fiat.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, Carlo's a great guy.
And I'm on the executive board for the New York Building Congress, and I co-chair and the engineering group with.
Oh, very clear. Yeah, well, Carlo's great, but he refuses to answer that question because I asked him that question.
Because he's going
to
insult someone. But there's like four or five, like 1As and 1Bs. But that's the one that it's been the same taste. It's whatever their formula is for their sauce or whatever, has been the same for 40 years. And it's always excellent. can never go wrong.
Well, Joe, I got to tell you, it's been a lot of fun getting to know you a little bit better. Love what you're doing for the industry, the next generation, Gensler, everything. And I learned a lot, and I'm thankful for that. That's all the time we have for today. Do you have any final words you want to share?
Thank you very much for doing this. I think it's wonderful. It takes effort for people like you to help the next generation. So really appreciate it.
Thanks. Yeah, no, we appreciate it. And trying, right? Whatever. I was inspired, fortunately, by mentors I have. And I hope that we can all inspire someone else, right? It takes a village kind of idea. So
have a great holiday, Eric.
You too. Take care, Joe. Thanks so much. And thanks again for listening, everybody. And keep an eye out for future episodes.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Building Better Futures. The show notes include links to any resources mentioned in today's show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you never miss an episode and leave us a 5-star review.